This is Cruise Radio.
Broadcasting from the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio. Broadcasting from the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. This is Cruise Radio. Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio. My name is Doug Parker. Happy to have you here, my friend. A review of Carnival Magic this week and staff writer Richard Sims on deck. A lot of cruise news, a lot of things happening to ships over the past few days, that's for sure. Looks like Ruby Princess set it all in motion a couple of weeks ago. What else do we have here? Cruise news today, the three things you need to know every Monday through Friday. You can find that, the audio version, just opposite of this. Or to see how scary I look at 5:30 every morning, go to the Cruise Radio YouTube channel for the video version. Staff writer Richard Sims, hey buddy.
Hey Doug.
Little incident over the weekend with Norwegian Prima.
This could have been a whole lot worse than it turned out. So Norwegian Prima, which is the line's newest ship, was docked in Belgium when suddenly strong winds caused the ship to pull away from the docks. If you think about the side of a ship as being like a gigantic sail, and that sail suddenly being hit by 50-mile-an-hour winds, you kind of understand how this happened. There's video that you can watch, and it's kind of shocking because you see several of the mooring lines snap, and then two really large gangways. They're, you know, not the little short ones, the big long ones. As the ship is pulling away from the dock, one is being dragged into the water along with the ship, and the other is dragged off the dock and completely sinks. Fortunately, nobody was injured. Most passengers had already disembarked earlier in the day to explore the port, and they were starting to make their way back to the ship, given that this happened around 2:45 in the afternoon. Ultimately, two tugs came and helped get the ship back to the pier, and shorter gangways were able to be used to get everybody back on board. And the ship was able to resume its normally scheduled itinerary that evening, but, you know, like I said, the video is kind of shocking, and when you think about the fact that there could have been people on there, it could have been a lot worse.
And another ship bumps the dock.
In this case, Scarlet Lady was arriving in Miami, and as she was sort of maneuvering and aligning herself with the dock, she backed into one of the mooring dolphins. Nobody was injured, and it could probably be considered a relatively minor incident, but the ship did sustain damage. Luckily, it wasn't anything so severe that like they had to take the ship out of service for more than a few hours. Crews were brought in, repairs were made, the Coast Guard cleared the ship to continue on its itinerary. It ended up, you know, leaving later than it was scheduled to by about 6 hours. And, you know, there is, because of the modern age that we live in, there is video of this event as well. But I'll say it's a lot less dramatic than the video of Prima losing her gangways.
And you could soon have another private island to visit.
File this one under what took you so long? Private islands are crazy popular with cruise guests. They're money makers for cruise lines because, you know, instead of dumping people off in a port, you're dumping them on your private island where they are going to spend money, and that money is going basically directly into your pocket. Half Moon Cay, for example, Carnival's private island, consistently ranks as one of the most popular destinations that cruisers want to visit. Same is true of Disney's Castaway Cay. Well, recently Celebrity announced that they'd be doing a few sailings which stop at Perfect Day at Coco Cay, which just happens to be owned by their sister company, Royal. But that always seemed kind of like a temporary solution to a long-term problem because, you know, even though Perfect Day is a very big island, it also already is home to these huge mega ships. You know, Royal Caribbean obviously always has the largest ships in the world. So you put those people on that island and it can fill up pretty quickly. Well, Cruise Critic earlier this week spoke to the head of Celebrity who said that, yeah, they are in the market for their own private island destination. No word on where or how big or anything else like that, just sort of a general acknowledgement that they're looking around, they're putting out feelers. What I find interesting will be what direction Celebrity chooses to go. I feel like they have a different audience than Royal Caribbean, so I think they'll go on in a more upscale, less amusement park like direction. I feel like they'll be more like MSC's private island than they will their sister private island, Perfect Day, which is, you know, that's like just one big amusement park. So, but we don't know yet. We'll see it, you know, they haven't found any place yet, so it could take a while. There are other islands already in development. We've got, you know, the one being developed in Nassau. We've got who else is developed? Oh, Disney has their new island being developed, or their new point being developed. So we'll have to see what direction they go. I assume it will be Nassau, because Celebrity is sort of making a bigger push into Nassau than they have in the past. So I'm assuming it'll be somewhere in the Bahamas, but only time will tell.
A lot of Carnival Cruise Line news over the past week or so. So take it away.
Yeah, just every time we turned around, Carnival had something new going on. It's kind of like we're going to do like a Carnival news dump here. We'll start with Carnival's next ship, Jubilee, which is expected to be floated out this weekend. That puts her one step closer to her December debut. Sea trials will start in August, and then as of now, her inaugural sailing is set to embark on December 23rd out of Galveston. And that means that if everything goes as planned, some people are going to be having a really amazing Christmas, because they'll be on this new ship and getting to explore it. And I mean, that is kind of, for me, the ultimate idea of how to spend Christmas. Of course, the problem is that if there is any delay along the way, you booked this family Christmas vacation and the inaugural sailing gets bumped. So we'll see. I always feel like it's a 50-50 chance that something might get bumped. Next up, we have an update on a story we first told you about a month or two ago. We talked about those newly revamped dining room menus. You know, celebrity chef Emeril Lagasse had his hands all over this and sort of tweaked the menus, and some things stayed the same but had maybe new side dishes added, and they put a new section on the menu that includes some of Emeril's favorite dishes, that kind of thing. They were tested on Carnival Dream last month, and they seem to have done very well, because this week they were introduced on the Carnival Conquest. The plan is to add the new menus to a few ships every month, so that by sometime in probably early 2024, they're on every ship in the fleet. Which ships are next? Carnival Horizon should get them any day now if they haven't already. And the next four ships to get the menus, so if you're booked on one of these in the next few weeks, you're going to get the new menus. They are the Carnival Sunrise, Vista, Radiance, and Mardi Gras. So that's two stories. Now here's our third story. Is kind of a less good news story. This is about the Carnival Pride. So for the last day or two, the ship has been experiencing some quote-unquote technical issues. And for a while, it was a little unclear what was going to happen. The ship at one point sat in the ocean, pretty much stock still. On social media, people were saying it sat there for about 12 hours while they were trying to determine what was going on. And we now have communication from Carnival that sort of explains the situation a little bit and sets up what's going to happen next. In a letter that they sent to guests who are booked on the next sailing, they said that Carnival Pride is experiencing a technical issue and is making an unplanned stop in Kiel, Germany today. This was on Thursday in the United States, or Wednesday in the United States, so that we can board expert technicians. While we are working to make the repair and get the ship back to Dover as quickly as possible, we have made the difficult decision to cancel the 9-day cruise that was scheduled to depart from Dover on Friday. So basically, people who have likely already been making their way to Europe are going to arrive and find out that their cruise has been canceled. So Carnival is offering a couple of options here. For one, those who haven't yet traveled to Europe, they can get a full refund, as well as a 100% future cruise credit. Plus, they'll pay any cancellation fees for airlines and things like that. For people who are already in Europe or are basically arriving there now, they'll reimburse them for two nights of a hotel. They'll give them a food per diem, that kind of thing. And they'll cover any airline changes that they need to make to get basically back home. Now, one interesting thing here is they don't know exactly how long it's going to take to get the problem fixed. So what they are telling people is, if you're in Europe and, you know, you happen to be hanging out long enough until this is resolved, they might end up operating a revised itinerary with a shorter cruise that would end in Dover on the originally scheduled debarkation date of the 30th. They basically, you know, are saying, if you're here and you want to you know, stay and take the risk, we may be able to get you on the ship and do at least a shorter cruise later in the week. But the actual 9-day cruise is definitely canceled. They are not going to be able to set sail for that on Friday. So, you know, it's a little bit of a waiting game for some people. They're also exploring to see if there's any availability on 7-day cruises out of Southampton on the 22nd that maybe people might want to switch over and do that instead, if that's a possibility. So that is basically where things stand as we, well, I was going to say go to press, but as we wrap up this recording and this week's Carnival news dump.
You know what's crazy, man? The amount of people who travel these days, overseas especially, whatever. If you're in the States and you're going down the road to the cruise pier, I guess I can see not having travel insurance. I mean, I always do, but traveling, like when I was in Asia last month, or I was in Europe in the Med, and where was I? Norway, I think. The amount of people who don't travel with travel insurance who are stuck at the airport. It's just like so frustrating. It's like, just spend the extra $30, $40, $50, you know?
I don't care how much it is. I mean, sometimes on these more expensive trips, you do have to pay more because, you know, there's more included, especially if you're traveling overseas. You might be covering not only your cruise cost, but your airline cost. And, you know, I have only had to use my cruise insurance once. I've actually had several situations where I could have used it, but I didn't. But I've actually used it once because of a medical situation that arose during a cruise. But I agree. I am of the mindset that I'm paying this much money for a trip. I will pay an extra, you know, whatever, $100, $200, take my money in order to make sure that I am covered in situations like this. And you're right. I mean, we have both heard so many stories from so many people who don't have cruise insurance. And what angers me, I mean, like literally angers me, is people who don't have the cruise insurance and then get mad at the cruise line because the cruise line or the airline or whatever other expenses they've come up with will not cover it. You know, like that's the whole point of cruise insurance, is so that if this happens, you are covered.
All right, listener question here. I know a lot of ports are using facial recognition, but that freaks me out. So Mark wants to know, can I opt out of it?
You know, I actually have a friend who feels the same way. They are just very protective of their personal information and their, you know, everything, and they see that as somehow being very, very intrusive. Now, to me, I'm like, you know, I'm pretty sure they already have my picture. It's, you know, for one reason or another. But for those of you who are uncomfortable with the idea of facial recognition, which really is being used in a lot of ports now, Carnival has been rolling it out quite a bit, and it really does substantially speed up the process of getting off the ship and the whole notion of going through customs. If it freaks you out to do facial recognition, yes, you can request to do it the old-fashioned way, where you go up to, you know, someone at one of the little booths and they look at your passport and they ask you a couple of questions and wave you on through. So it's not something that you have to do, but, you know, having had it used the last few times I sailed, I will say I find it facial recognition to be so fast and so easy. And, you know, so far they haven't uncovered my secret identity, so I'm feeling good about it.
All right. Email your listener questions, doug@cruiseradio.net. Richard, thank you.
Always glad to be here.
Have a question or a comment for the show? Send an email or voice memo to doug@cruiseradio.net.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer. If you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out tripinsurance.com.
Have a question or a comment for the show?
Yeah!
Send an email or voice memo to doug@cruiseradio.net.
Dale and his family took an 8-night holiday cruise. They did the Christmas sailing on Carnival Magic back in December. I know, we're 8 months late here. What do you want me to do? It's been a crazy year. I'm just getting on track. I had files all over the place. So we're going to go ahead and air it this week anyway. 8 nights, Carnival Magic. Dale joins us on the show. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, thank you, Doug. I'm happy to be here today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm excited to talk about this Christmas cruise on Magic. But before we do that, we're going to take a step back. You're up there in the Northwest. What made you want to take this 8-nighter out of Port Canaveral?
Yeah, it was actually a few things. I have 4 children, but my 2 oldest children moved out this last year. And so we weren't going to have them home for Christmas. And so we kind of talked with our 2 youngest and said, hey, do you want to still do Christmas at home or should we do something different? And they said, let's do something different. And we decided, well, if we're going to do something, let's go on a cruise to the Caribbean. So that's what we booked and planned and had a great time.
Very cool. So you make your way down. Actually, around Christmas time, Dale, because I was flying from Florida. Well, first off, I was supposed to do Christmas in Chicago, and then that got derailed after 3 canceled flights because of this crazy storm that happened. So I just went down to St. Thomas, and I got like all kind of delays going down there. Did you get impacted at all with any of these Southwest debacle or airline issues?
I didn't get impacted by the Southwest issue, although that was certainly a topic of discussion on the cruise because a lot of people on board were affected. But of course, a lot of people ended up missing the cruise because of that. We did get impacted because Seattle kind of got the first part of that storm. And so when we left our home, we actually, of course, we're just going to drive down to the airport and get on the flight. But when we saw the bad weather coming in, we ended up going down to the airport the day before. And I'm really glad that we did because it was incredibly icy north of Seattle. We were really slipping and sliding all over the place. And then once we got to Seattle and south, it was okay. But then it ended up being icy that morning. In fact, they were doing de-icing on the planes in Seattle, which is fairly unusual, even during the winter here. So I really was glad that we had decided to go down to the airport the night before.
Good call on your part there. And any pre-cruise time? I mean, I'm assuming you went in at least a day early or so because of all the issues. And did you do anything worth mentioning in Central Florida?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually flew down 2 days before the cruise. Number one, of course, because it's winter and crossing the country, we wanted to make sure we had some time. Like I said, because our flight ended up being a little delayed out of Seattle due to the de-icing, we barely made our connection in Charlotte. Like, I think if our gate had not been right across, we might have actually missed it. It was that close. The day before the cruise, my 2 youngest, both were 17 at the time. They're now 18. But they are very much into science, technology, history. You know, we had already done the theme parks a few years ago. And so we decided to go to the Kennedy Space Center Visitors Center. And that was simply amazing. And we spent the entire day there. They have, a whole building dedicated to the Apollo program. They have a whole other building that's dedicated to the space shuttle Atlantis. They have like a rocket garden. So you can see some of the different rockets that NASA has built over the years. And then a lot of stuff around what they're doing with Artemis and the kind of the plan to go to the moon and then go to the Mars. And so really, really interesting. I would certainly say I would recommend that to anybody if you're going to Central Florida and you've done kind of the normal tourist stuff.
Do they showcase a lot of SpaceX there?
They do. They actually talk about it. So one of the things they do is that there's a main visitor center. And then if you want to go to the building where they have all the Apollo stuff, you actually get on a bus. And so the bus takes you past the big building where they build the rockets. And then also you then drive past several of the different launch sites. So they talk about which launch sites being used by SpaceX and stuff. Now, unfortunately, there wasn't a launch going on while we were there. But you can definitely see all the different launch pads that they've used over the years. And they kind of tell you a little story about each one when you're on the bus ride.
You must have just missed it. They were doing like a launch a week, I think, last year down from Port Canaveral.
Yeah, I think I don't remember why they didn't do in the week we were there. But I mean, that was also right before, as you talked about the winter storm, that was right before the cold snap hit Florida, too. In fact, we actually left Port Canaveral the day that it's cooled down. And we're very fortunate that we kind of were right ahead of that storm.
Yeah, for sure. So you make your way to Port Canaveral to board Carnival Magic. How was the embarkation?
It was honestly, it was pretty crazy. So that was, of course, that was on the 23rd of December. There were 6 ships in port that day. The traffic into Port Canaveral was really, really significant. We actually had gotten early boarding, but unfortunately, because we were taking a shuttle service from our hotel, we had to kind of go with the schedule that they had. When we got to the terminal, the line was all the way out the building. But it, I mean, so while the lines were long, I would say it took us about 45 minutes or so to get on board. The lines actually moved pretty quickly, so it didn't really feel like you were waiting that long. But it was crazy, and it was also because some of the ships that were there that day are some of the bigger ones. I mean, like the Prima was there that day, the Maravilla, Independence of the Seas. I think the Disney Wish was there. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty busy day in the port.
Yeah, it's a lot of ships for Port Canaveral, especially those large ones there. So you make your way on board Magic. What were your first impressions?
Honestly, I thought the Magic was incredibly beautiful. I mean, as you know, I know you've been on board, is that, you know, the atrium definitely done in kind of greens and kind of some tan colors. I think it looks really nice. You know, while it's, you know, not a new ship, obviously it was built, I think, back in 2011. Carnival's done a tremendous job taking care of it. It's in great shape. And then, of course, the fact that they had it all decorated for Christmas. So there was a huge Christmas tree in the atrium. There was decorations all over the ship. And then there was a huge gingerbread display that the culinary team had put together. And so I would say the ship was very festive for the holiday. But honestly, I thought the color combination and the decor was great.
Every time I walk by one of those gingerbreads that the little cities that they make, I always wonder, like, what does this actually taste like? Like, I wonder if anybody's actually ever tried to take a chimney off and try to bite it. Like, oh, nope, don't want it. Don't like this.
You know, I have to admit, probably I would say maybe on the 3 or 4 day cruises, they might have more of that problem.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you're probably, but I have thought that too. It's like, I'm amazed that, you know, just they have the you know, cord to kind of keep you away from it. But I often, you know, with all the kids and teenagers on board, I was actually somewhat surprised that it looked like it got left alone the entire cruise.
So what kind of stateroom did you book for this 8-night cruise, and what were your thoughts of it?
We booked a balcony. We were up on the same deck that the bridge is on, so kind of about midway up the ship on the starboard side. Really, really like that a lot. It was very nice to be able to go out there each day and kind of enjoy the Caribbean weather. Obviously, when you have 4 people in a room, it can be a little bit tight, but I thought there was actually plenty of storage in the room. And then just by having that balcony, it kind of gives you that little bit of extra space. So if you do need a second away, you can just kind of step out there and enjoy the breeze.
For this sailing here, with it being a Christmas cruise and everything, did you notice, like you said, it was kind of crazy as you made your way through the terminal, but as you made your way on board the ship and kind of everyone getting settled and stuff, it seems like on a lot of the Carnival ships, people like to congregate right there, right in that atrium. Did you notice that happening a little bit more because it was a family sailing and a big Christmas crowd?
I think a little bit. I do think one of the things that Carnival did a good job on is that they, because of the fact that they're still doing the kind of the e-muster drill, you know, as soon as you get on board, you know, the people are directing you to where your muster station is. I mean, they immediately look at your boarding pass and say, hey, go ahead and go up to your muster station. While there was still a fair crowd in the atrium, it seemed like people were dissipating quickly as well. So, I mean, that's what we did. But as soon as we got on, we immediately went up to the fourth deck and our muster station was in their non-smoking casino that the Magic has. And so personally, I know a lot of the cruise lines are going back to the old style muster drill, but I love it because you just get on board, you go, you get the talk, you see the life jackets, they tell you what to do and you're done.
Yeah, no, for sure. So let's talk about dining on this 8-night cruise, and how was the Lido Deck Marketplace?
Actually, was quite pleasantly surprised. I found that the food was good there all week. Definitely very consistent. Didn't really have anything up there that I thought was bad. Certainly, I would say, you know, I was on the Splendor in July and found the food to be a little better than it was on the Splendor. I mean, obviously the Lido was very crazy on debarkation day, but for the rest of the week, anytime we ate up there, I don't think I ever was in line for more than 5 or 10 minutes. So it seemed like stuff went pretty quickly there.
Very good. And now the main dining room, what time dining did you have and how was your experience there? And actually hit on the Christmas dinner too, like anything special there as well.
So we ended up having anytime dining. So that meant that we were in the Northern Lights dining room, which is the one that's a little bit forward of the midship. You know, I do like the anytime dining. I mean, I certainly like the flexibility of it. You know, obviously the fact that you don't get the same wait staff means that you get a little bit more inconsistency in your service. But what I found that I like about it is that the fact that you can make your reservation on the app, request a table, and then basically by the time we would get to the dining room, nearly always our table was ready. So that was something that was really great. Because one of the things that my family tries to do is, because we do have older teenagers, they generally like to hang out by themselves through the day. But we really try and have breakfast together and dinner together. And then, you know, and of course, obviously we'll meet up at various times during the day at various activities, but, you know, it gives that opportunity to kind of sit down and plan out our day. For Christmas Day, they did have a special dinner. I mean, I think the main thing was kind of a traditional turkey dinner, but then they also had other things that, you know, they didn't have the lobster that night, but they had some other things that I think they generally save for some of their dress up days, you know, and so wasn't quite a formal day because our formal day was actually on Christmas Eve, but I thought they did a really good job making a really nice Christmas dinner. And then the other nice thing is that they had a Christmas service midday that I thought they did a really good job of where they weren't, you know, singing the fun Christmas songs, so to speak. They were singing more of the kind of religious Christmas songs, but kind of in a very non-denominational way. But It was really well done. It was led by one of the entertainers, one of the singer and dancer people, and she has a beautiful voice. And then, you know, obviously the people in the theater sang along with her. And so, honestly, I thought Christmas was really, really well done by Carnival.
Who was the cruise director on this one?
It was Joey.
So how about the specialty restaurants? They have a couple of them on board. Did you have a chance to dine at any of those?
We ate at Cucina di Capitano, which is their Italian restaurant, kind of about midway through the cruise. That was excellent. My wife raved about the food, and I thought the food and the service were really, really excellent. And then the last night of the cruise, we ate in the steakhouse, and that also was absolutely phenomenal. The places are excellent. The service is great. We ate at some of the other restaurants that you pay for, but they're, you know, kind of like the Seafood Shack. We ate there a couple of times during the day. So overall, though, I think Carnival does a good job. I mean, obviously, because the Magic's a little bit older, it doesn't have some of the newer specialty restaurants that are getting built on like the Mardi Gras and Celebration.
Did you hit up the pizza place?
My boys certainly did. I think the crew probably knew them by name by the end of the cruise. Because I mean, I had pizza a couple of times, but they very much liked the pizza. They actually said that they thought this was some of the best pizza they had had. Now, when we were on the Splendor in July, they hadn't been as impressed with the pizza there. But two things that they said is they thought the pizza was better, and then also the service seemed like it was a lot faster. The pizza place is on the aft part of the ship by the pool that's at the back.
So let's talk about the entertainment during this 8-night cruise. How was it?
I thought it was really good. I think, you know, as you likely know, and probably a lot of your listeners know, Carnival kind of does some what I would call pretty standard sort of song and dance shows, you know, very theme oriented. Like they have their rock show, they do a country show, they do one that's like all about the piano. I think all those shows were pulled off, you know, very well. I was impressed by the talents of the dancers and singers. They did do one show that was kind of extra, I think, because of the additional length of this cruise, where basically the singers and dancers would pick their favorite song, and they were actually doing the show in conjunction with the band that's on board. And that was actually one of my favorite shows, because it wasn't obviously as produced as some of the other shows. The fact that they're singing songs that they really like, I think that comes across. The house band on board was really good. We went and enjoyed their shows quite a bit. The only bad thing was that their lead singer finished her contract at our last port of call. And so the new singer that came on, I think ultimately will be really good as well. But of course, they hadn't quite gelled with the band at that point. So it wasn't quite as good the last couple of days. The comedy shows, we actually only ended up going to one of those. You know, generally, I really like the comedians that Carnival gets. I will say when we went to the one show, the comedian was kind of only really mildly amusing. And so we just kind of never made it back. You know, I heard mixed reviews. I certainly heard a lot of people say the comedians were excellent. I had others that said they weren't as good as other ships that they've been on. You know, obviously, I think generally Carnival does a good job with their comedians. The piano player was very entertaining. Of course, the piano bar in the Magic, it was really hard to get a spot in there. But we did get to see him do the pre-show before they did their piano theme one in the main theater. And he was really, really good. And then the cruise staff, I think, was excellent. I mean, Joey, the cruise director, he was awesome. They did a white party on the last night of the cruise in the main atrium. And then they finished it off by having some snow come down in the atrium, which is I think it was soap, but it was pretty well done.
So how were the sea days as far as crowds and congestion?
I think it obviously depends on where you were on the ship. I mean, I think the main pool area was generally pretty crowded, but, you know, because the Magic has an aft pool, there's multiple hot tubs that are located on the side. And then, of course, you have the Serenity adult area up the front of the ship up pretty high. There was definitely places that you could go where the crowds were not there. One of the things I do think the Magic does is that there's pretty good traffic flow ultimately. So even when it's crowded, it still feels like you can get through things pretty fast. One thing that we noticed, obviously, because it was a holiday cruise, there were a lot of teenagers and kids on. I think Joey said that there was about 4,100 people. So that's, of course, a little bit over 100% occupancy. But transparently, I didn't feel like the Magic was as crowded as like when we went on Ovation of the Seas back in 2019. It just seems like the traffic flow was handled a lot better.
Now, you mentioned there is a non-smoking casino on board here, which I believe they put it back in one of the conference rooms. I think they built that out. But how was the, like walking through the smoking casino, how was that as far as the smell in and around it? Because sometimes that ship, the smoke tends to waft into the atrium at times.
Yeah, so I definitely think it's one of those things that at the beginning of the cruise, I didn't notice the smoke as often walking through the casino. By the end of the cruise, I noticed it more. I don't know if it was just because there were a lot of people smoking on board, or you know, maybe the air filtration systems on the Magic aren't as good. But yeah, it did come into the atrium a little bit, although certainly it wasn't bad. And you could certainly tell that they were making efforts. So it wasn't like I walked through the casino and felt like I was being followed by a cloud of smoke when I left.
And did you get the Wi-Fi package on this cruise?
I did. Yeah, I got the top end one because I work in technology. I do like to try and stay connected as much as possible. Transparently, I'm really, really waiting for them to upgrade the internet
right.
packages across the ships because it was not very fast.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, man. So let's talk about the ports of call on this 8-night cruise. What we'll do here is give us the port you went to, a highlight, and we'll move to the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. So our first port of call, which was the day after Christmas, was St. Martin. St. Martin was probably the busiest port we were in. There were a number of other ships that were in port with us that day. We actually did a tour through an external tour operator, which was basically called a two-beach tour, where they took us to Orient Beach and then to Maho Beach, plus a tour of the island. We got to spend about 2 hours at Orient Beach and then about an hour at Maho Beach. And of course, for those that maybe haven't been there, Maho Beach is the one that is right in the path of the airport. And so the planes fly in right over you. It was really an awesome tour. I think the tour operator did a tremendous job. We learned a lot about the island. I think the thing that really stood out to me besides the beauty of the beaches was really, it's amazing how different the Dutch and French sides of the island are. Like you very much have that mm-hmm. feeling of the two different countries, which I didn't expect it to stand out as much as it did, but loved it. St. Martin is a beautiful, beautiful island.
It really is. And after St. Martin, where'd you go?
Yeah, so our next port was St. Kitts, technically St. Kitts and Nevis. That was nice. There was only one other ship in port with us. I think it was the Queen Mary 2. We took the train tour of the island. The tour was definitely fun. Personally, I thought that the bus ride that you take to and from the train was a little better because you could actually hear the announcements. And the driver we had was incredibly entertaining. When we were on the train, we were having kind of a hard time hearing them talk about the things. And it still was a nice tour. I just probably would do something different next time. Like that we had considered going to Nevis and going to the birthplace of Alexander Hamilton. Because once again, my boys really, really like history. But we decided since this was our first time there, we would do the train. And I liked it. It was beautiful. Just might do something different the next time around.
I didn't realize there was a train there. Is it like a trolley train or a train on tracks?
No, it's a train on tracks. It is like a narrow gauge, but it goes basically all around the perimeter of the island. And so the advantage is that you can see, you kind of get to see that part where the Caribbean and the Atlantic Ocean mm-hmm. run into each other. It kind of goes through a lot of the little various little towns. You can see some of the old plantations that exist there. And of course, lots of the monkeys, they have some people that come on board that do some native dancing, and then they serve drinks a couple of times during the train. So I think it's like about a 3-hour tour. But yeah, very, very scenic. I mean, the island is very beautiful. It just it was hard to hear what they were talking about. So you'd kind of be like, well, I'm not sure what I'm looking at, but okay, I heard him mention something about it. So
gotcha. So your next port of call after St. Kitts, where'd you go?
Our next port was San Juan. We did through the cruise line. It's a tour of the two major forts that are right there by the cruise area. The forts are incredibly fascinating. And like I said, because my boys like history so much, they were really into that. It was a little bit interesting because the bus driver was very, very good, did a lot of, showing us the points of interest and telling some really good stories about San Juan and the history. The guide that was actually at the forts more just kind of let people wander and didn't really talk about the forts. I mean, overall, there's a lot of good, boards and stuff that you can read. and the forts are really cool. My boys really liked that because, like I said, they like the history so much. Probably the highlight for me was before we got back on the ship, we had to pick up a few essentials. So we went to that CVS pharmacy that's right there by the port. That has got to be the most crowded drugstore that I have ever been in my life. With the line went all the way through the drugstore and across the back of the store. And it was just, obviously everybody had kind of the same idea that we did to pick up stuff. But I like San Juan. San Juan is definitely a place I would like to go and stay a little bit longer because, you know, you only get to see a very tiny part of it when you're there on a cruise stop.
Now, did you have one more port after this one?
Yeah, we did. Our last port was in the Dominican Republic. We actually stopped in Amber Cove. I know obviously there's the option of Amber Cove or Playa de Planta, I think it is. So Amber Cove is the one that has the pool and all of that stuff that's basically right there by the port. And then there's like just a little shopping area. When we were there, we actually rented a poolside cabana. I thought that was really a great choice for several reasons. First off, you know, my boys, because it was getting towards the end of the cruise, it was nice to have a little bit more of a relaxing excursion. Obviously, we had done a lot of walking the day before at the forts, but also because you get unlimited rides on the zip lines and the water slides that they have there. And so, Doug, as you may remember, when I did my review of the Splendor, one of the things I said was that, you know, we had been at Icy Strait Point, and when we got up to the top, my boys then decided to let us know then that they had wanted to go on the zip line, but they didn't ask us when we were down where we could have actually gotten the tickets. And so that's something I'll have to take them back to do. But the fact that they could go on the zip line as much as they wanted was awesome. The water slides, of course, you get the reserved poolside lounge chairs. There was a hammock that was located underneath the cabana. And then also the cabana comes with a stocked fridge. So there are drinks already in there. And then, of course, if you have anything you want to put in there and keep it cold, you can do that. And then you also get the direct food service to the cabana. And so really, really was glad that we had done that because then kind of had a place where we could leave our stuff. Of course, we did walk around, do a little shopping, and of course, spend a lot of time in the pool and stuff. And so that was a very relaxing kind of into the cruise, basically.
Was there another ship in port with you that day?
There was, but they weren't in Amber Cove. They were in the other port. And gotcha. So, you know, I guess it's 20 or 30 minutes away. So we didn't even see them.
Gotcha. It sure is nice when you're the only ship in Amber Cove, because once there's two ships there, it gets a little tighter on that pool and trying to get your pool chair.
That was one of the things I was concerned about, because I did, you know, like it said there was going to be two ships there, and I didn't realize that the other ship was going to be at the other port. But that having the reserved pool chairs was nice. I mean, there was one time somebody actually did try and snag one of the pool chairs, and the staff that were there were like, no, these are reserved. Sorry, you can't sit here. So
you make your way back to Port Canaveral. How was debark?
Debark, I think it was really smooth. So we chose to do a late debark because we weren't flying home that day. And so obviously we know there's a lot of people that are very anxious to get off the ship, whether they have to drive back to their homes or get on planes. Obviously, because of the Southwest issue, a lot of people were super concerned about trying to get to the airport and arrange what their flights were going to be. So we got up, we had breakfast in the main dining room, and then we just kind of headed up to deck five. I think we actually sat in the piano bar and just waited for our number to be called. When you get off the ship, the customs uses the facial recognition. Mm-hmm. So getting through there was easy. We had to wait a little time to take our bus back because obviously there was so much traffic in the port. Really, everything was smooth. And then the bus dropped us off at the airport. And then from there, we actually arranged a shuttle that took us to our hotel. You know, we had decided that we didn't want to, you know, try and fly back that day. So we stayed another night, which that was New Year's Eve. And then we actually flew back home on New Year's Day.
So it sounds like a pretty successful sailing for it being Christmas. And now looking back here, any first time tips to offer anyone who may be considering either taking that Eastern Caribbean run or sailing on Carnival Magic?
I would certainly say, first off, first time tips just overall. I personally am a very strong believer that eating breakfast in the main dining room is the right thing to do. The reason I like that is it allows you to get your food consistently hot. You don't have to stand in line. And then at least if you're on a family cruise, it kind of gives you that opportunity to sort of talk about your day and what activities you want to do. And then, of course, if you're on Carnival, because of course they do the Sea Day brunch a couple of times during the cruise, you know, that's I think that's something not to be missed. I think it makes for a good start to the day. I mean, I certainly don't object to anybody who goes up to the Lido and eats up there, but I find it to be more relaxing start to the day than going and getting in line in the buffet.
Yeah, 100%. Looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise for y'all?
Honestly, the thing I was the most happy about was that all of the ports were awesome. There certainly wasn't a port that we felt that was a disappointment in any way. I thought the ship was great. I mean, maybe a tad overcrowded, although, like I said, we fully expected that sailing at Christmas. It's a kind of different experience to be on the ship and be in the Caribbean, but then have it fully decorated for Christmas. And I thought that was made the cruise very memorable and special. In fact, it was actually sort of funny when we were disembarking, they had put up the banner for New Year's because, of course, that was the next cruise. So it's kind of funny to walk off and you see the huge Carnival banner that says, you know, New Year's Eve. So
right. It's almost like Disney, right? Like one day they'll have down the Halloween stuff and Christmas will be up the very next day by the time the park opens again. It's crazy how they can transition that fast and how many people it takes and how, I guess, organized it is. With those Carnival ships have like 40 something Christmas trees fully decorated around the whole ship and all that. So it blows my mind.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing.
And they do it like in just a couple of hours between turns, which is even wilder to me. But a lot of things, I guess, blow my mind in the cruise industry. Well, your final thoughts of Carnival Magic?
Definitely would go on that ship again. Certainly would go on that itinerary again. We really, really enjoyed it. Like I said, I thought Carnival did a great job. I love the fact that our group on Facebook decided to do a gift exchange. That made it very fun to have that kind of come back to your cabin and have a surprise where you have a gift waiting for you. I love that they celebrated Christmas and had a service, but really tried to make it a very inclusive service. And I thought they did a tremendous job with that.
We've been talking with Dale about his 8-night Christmas cruise on board Carnival Magic. Dale, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing this review with us.
Yeah, thank you, Doug. I really appreciate your time today.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy.
Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast, or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.